Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. The Let's Get Busy podcast is brought to you by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in new ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com. This episode of the Let's Get Busy podcast is sponsored by The Writer's Loft. The Writer's Loft in Sherbourne, Massachusetts is a retreat, a conference, and a writer's room of requirement, all rolled into one supportive community. Like a year-long writing conference, The Loft hosts classes and workshops led by the likes of Aaron Dion, AC Goggin, Lori Griffin Burns, and Jen Malone. The Loft also hosts frequent panels and free craft chats with authors and illustrators such as Linda Mullally Hunt, Sarah Brannan, Anna Staniszewski, Josh Funk, and more. The Loft offers critiques from agents and editors and hosts monthly write-ins, social gatherings, manuscript mixers, and book launches. It also is home to critique groups and think tanks for writers and illustrators in all genres, for those who are traditionally published, self-published, and pre-published. And like many a good writing retreat, the Writer's Loft always has a quiet space for you to write. The Writer's Loft is a 501c3 organization centrally located just west of Boston, but not far from the New Hampshire, Rhode Island, and Connecticut borders, with members from all over New England. For more information about their groups and upcoming events, please visit thewritersloft.org. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, award winners, up-and-comers, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 193 of the podcast with Josh Funk, making his picture book debut with Lady Pancake and Sir French Toast, which is published by Sterling Children's Books. Josh is a man with a presence on social media, and for all who know him, it's a very warm and supportive presence indeed. He's into promoting what his friends are working on. He always is on hand to share a blog post or resource he loves with the Kidlit community. He's a person a whole lot of people are aware of just for being a great guy. This all serves him very well when it comes to his debut picture book, which is basically an episode of The Amazing Race set inside a refrigerator. So good. Josh was in the neighborhood, so we recorded this podcast live and in person, which was a special treat that I hope you'll enjoy. Here is episode number 193 of the podcast with Josh Funk. Let's get busy. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Josh Funk. I am so excited that you are joining me in person.
Thanks. I'm really excited to be here. It's very strange to actually speak to you because I've heard your voice over the years a lot.
So you're at my school. Welcome to my school.
Yeah, thanks.
When you were coming in and I picked you up in the office, I actually thought, I don't know what this person sounds like. So I was waiting to hear you. I have this weird thing where a couple people now, since they've listened to the podcast, have seen me and made that weird remark where they're like, oh, I didn't expect the voice to come out of that face.
Yeah. I don't know what that means. I've seen your picture. You're taller than I thought.
There you go. Okay. Yeah. I'm a tall drink of water.
Yeah. But other than that, yeah, pretty much what I expected.
Well, and funny, you got to come into it to be with my students because this is the life I lead beyond the podcast. And so you're really getting a look behind the curtains. And then I also get to celebrate your book coming out.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's funny because I don't spend time with children other than my own.
Yeah.
Or I'm not used to. So this whole school visit thing is brand new. And obviously you're used to spending time with hundreds of different kids all the time. But yeah. For me, it's brand, I know a couple kids particularly well, but just those two.
I think about if I were to become a published author and go out like that, that's the part that I'm comfortable with, is being in front of children. But how that's something that you sort of need to, I mean, you were great with the kids, but it's something that you sort of have to learn to get used to, right? Because your author visits are going to come.
Yeah, I'm definitely having fun with it, and I'm figuring out how to, that the timing works during, 20, 30 yeah. minutes, et cetera. It's funny, too. My wife is a teacher, and there are times when I'll say, hey, I was at the school today, and one of the teachers made a point, like, you should do it this differently. And she's like, how did that never occur to you? And I'm like, you're a teacher. You do this all the time. Like, it may be obvious to you, but I don't know these things. So yeah. It's funny. But yeah, no, the school visits, they seem to be going well.
Well, and so. You write good books, and that's the first way that you get in. I mean, you've got Lady Pancake and Sir French Toast, which is adorable. I know that I've been talking about it on social media a lot. Or rather, I've been talking about the cover a lot. And then you made this amazing book trailer that we got to show the kindergartners today. And they loved it. And you wrote the song and everything. Come on, this is great.
It was pretty cool to see the kids laughing during the trailer. Yeah, that was fun. No, I did the whole thing with GarageBand and iMovie. And obviously the people at Sterling, they sent some high-resolution images that I could use. And it's basically just a slideshow of about, I think, eight different spreads through the book.
Right, but it gives a good sample of the entire story without giving away the ending, of course.
Yeah, and it wasn't really that hard to make the book trailer. It was a lot of fun. And I used to write a lot of music back in college. They were kind of nerdy songs. So I know a little bit about music theory. I was a big They Might Be Giants fan. Yeah. I think I still probably am, but mostly of their earlier stuff.
Have you ever listened to When They Come On, Ask Me Another, that NPR podcast?
No, I don't.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, they're smart guys.
Yeah.
No, but I love their kids' music. I took my daughter to see them perform back in, I think, 2010. I don't think they have any kids' albums since then. But
I think it's just the three.
It's four albums. Three of them have DVDs.
Okay, that's what it is then.
But
right on. So. Well, I should not go too fast ahead of myself before giving you a chance to share what is Lady Pancake and Sir French Toast.
So Lady Pancake and Sir French Toast, it's sort of like Toy Story in the fridge. You know what are that's how I always thought of it. What is the food doing when you're not looking? It's about Lady Pancake and Sir French Toast. They're racing for the last drop of syrup left in the fridge, and they cause culinary chaos along the way. I think that was part of my pitch letter, or query letter that I sent out. And they cause a giant mess and run through a lot of foods and. I like to make every page a different visual to be illustrated. And a lot of how I write books is, what do I want to see illustrated? Kind of my thought. What have I not seen before? What do I want to see on the page?
And that, does that go all the way down to even like the theme of the story, like to have racing food? Like,
yeah, I think anthropomorphic food. There's this, and maybe we can find it on YouTube. There's this, I think it's a grapefruit. Stop motion grapefruit from Sesame Street that sings some old opera song, maybe put in the show notes.
No doubt, if I can find it.
But I guess I've always been fascinated by what food's emotions are. Maybe, I don't know. But I think just seeing a pancake or French toast, sailing on through an ocean or a bean avalanche or just some of those things. I've never seen that before.
So. The resolution of your story, the big twist in your story, I want to share this with you because I didn't get to talk to you about this yet. To me, it was this great thing where it's so obvious what the twist is going to be, and yet I didn't see it coming. So when it happened, I was like, this is the greatest. Of course this has to be the way it resolves. And that was really enjoyable to me. And as you were reading it aloud today, and I've been reading aloud to my son, I was having that over and over, like, oh man, the last part that switches here is the greatest.
Well, I think it, and it was always like that from the very, very first, I was going to say the very first draft, that it always ended that way. And I guess, I can't talk too much about it without giving it away, but it always had to end that way.
Yeah.
And the very last line was hard to get to. Like, once you get past the ending, you know, how do you feel about that?
Yeah.
Was always a little tricky. But I think they did a great job putting it together with the wordless spreads at the end and the gatefold.
I think that works really beautifully. Yeah. Gatefold, yeah, when it folds out.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't know that until a bookseller told me, "Oh, you've got a gatefold," and I was like, "Oh, of course I do, sure."
Yeah. Well, to preface it a little bit for people listening, that as you're saying, there's these two characters, Lady Pancakes or French Toast, and they're really comfortable being buddies in the leftover food section of their refrigerator. But sort of turn against one another in a race and competition when they have to get to the last drop of maple syrup. So to have that competition resolve, as it were, works out really well. And I think that it also helps that you have lots of smiling food in your book.
Oh, God. Brendan Kearney's illustrations are so awesome. I was so excited when they showed. I mean, he's relatively new to the picture book world. He's got a couple other books. He lives in England. But when they told me this is who we're looking at, and they show me his website, I was like, perfect.
Yeah.
Like and what he ended up doing was better than I can have ever imagined. I think a lot of authors say that. I've heard it on this podcast before that, mm-hmm. you know, authors say, oh, it was better than I imagined. But like, I did not imagine a strawberry hat with, I didn't imagine a hairdo that was made out of whipped cream. I think I always did imagine a monocle on the villain, but That's about it. I mean, you know, there were no illustration notes in this entire manuscript, and he did better than I could have hoped for.
Did you in your manuscript have it broken at all into pages? I know you talked about like wanting to have images that you wanted to see. Like, oh, I want to write something so that I can see this sort of come to life. But did you break down the pacing of it, as it were?
So I've never really done it. So this is a rhyming picture book,
right.
And they're rhyming couplets, so essentially they're just two lines at a time. For some reason, when I sent it out, I sent it out in groups of four, and there was a space between them. And I've never been one for dummies. I've never been one for and I probably should be. But I think at the time, it being my first book, and not an expert in how to make or design a picture book, I didn't do that, and. I think that they ended up splitting it up slightly differently. Some spreads have six lines on them. Some spreads have two lines on them. So it was not exactly how I laid it out, but I didn't put much thought into it. I figured they'll figure out how to spread the words across multiple spreads and make it work. Now, if I were more of an expert in how to design a picture book and had that vision, and maybe going forward, I will. I mean, it's over 2 years since I submitted this, in the first place, but I think that eventually maybe I will be able to put a little bit more thought into how they're laid out. And
yeah.
That will help the process.
But. Yeah, I mean, I guess only really if you are intentionally writing for a page turn. Is that even sort of necessary, right? I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, and you're totally right. And I think that that's something that I still am growing as a writer. I mean, I've only been doing this a handful of years.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, learning the page turns and learning where best they lie, I eventually, either it'll be obvious to whoever's reading it that this is where the page turn should go, or it'll be that I intentionally put it there and I explicitly state it.
You have a number of books now that you have contracts signed for. Have you gotten to a place where you sort of know what feels like a good length for your manuscript? Are you at that part? I mean, I've talked to a number of authors or aspiring writers even outside of this podcast just about there's a lot of talk about manuscripts that are too long or why can't we bring back long narrative nonfiction. And I tend to be on the side of, well, I don't really care about how many words you use as long as the right number of words for the story. And sometimes it feels like the word count is too long and other times I don't know. But is that something that you sort of now are at a place at all where you can feel with intuition that this is the length it needs to be?
I think that I feel like I have a good feel of it, but I read a lot of other people's manuscripts and critique groups, and I think a lot of times it's really important to get the whole story out. And sometimes people get stuck on how many words, like, oh, well, like, I really can't go past that 500 word mark, and then the story is just not complete.
Right.
So I think you got to write your whole story, and if it ends up being that it's 800 words, then maybe it's okay for a picture book, just based on, you know, what kind kind of story you're telling. Maybe it's for older kids, or maybe a lot of the words are in word bubbles, so it's more graphic novel-y, and it's supposed to be that way, I think. But maybe it's you're trying to cram too much into a picture book, and it should be middle grade, you know? Yeah. Or it should be a chapter book. I mean, it happens sometimes. I've written manuscripts that people are like, it's too much for a picture book. You're trying to get too much in. I always do like to make sure that each spread will have a different image. Otherwise, it's not quite as interesting for the reader, at least I think. I like to have to be able to see different spreads. But so if I'm writing a picture book that has too many spreads, then that could be a problem.
I was just going to say, I like it when you're able to, and you do this, or Brandon has done this on your in Lady Pancake, but to have a couple of those spreads where you just get to see the entire scene going on, that there's this bean avalanche, or there's this thing happening, and we're able to not just see, we're able to see the full spread image of it. That's nice, because especially with so much going on in the refrigerator, it's nice to be able to just look at the whole thing and look at all the colors and look at how the way, I don't know. It also reminds me, in your book in particular, that these page spreads almost work as the compartments of my refrigerator. Yeah. So you're getting that.
Yeah. He did a great job putting together. I love also the way he did some of the light backgrounds. They're sort of in like almost grayscale, but like you can see scenes in the background if you look closely. And, he, I guess, was an architect, and I can totally, or he studied to be an architect, and at least that's what it says in the end papers. I really haven't spoken much to him other than a little bit of Google chat, but I think that's the way the publishers like it, is to kind of keep it compartmentalized, at least when you're new to the industry. But he has a lot of geometric patterns, like really zoomed in if you look closely, which really comes out in the actual physical part of the book. When I was seeing digital copies, I could see it, but actually seeing the printed book recently, very, very cool.
You, this is your first book, and I know that you have, because you were sharing with me beyond this, you sort of fell into having a number of contracts on books as well as agent representation all in a really short amount of time. Can you retell that story on here? Because it's a great story.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It was in the in the spring of 2013, I decided that I was not getting good responses on my queries to agents with my picture book manuscripts. I think a lot of it had to do with that I wrote in rhyme, and there's a stigma against rhyme. And for various reasons, I was ready to my manuscripts were in pretty decent shape, and so I started sending directly to publishers. I sent Lady Pancake and Sir French Toast snail mail to about 10 publishers. And there was also an open submission period on Debbie Owey's blog, the Inky Girl blog for Scholastic. And so they were looking for things ages 0 to 5. And I didn't really have, most of my manuscripts I feel are in the 4 to 8 range. I like to use big words. But so I had one manuscript called Pyrosaurs that I sent to Scholastic. And then around the same time period, I was finishing up drafting Dear Dragon, which is a book about a boy and a dragon that are pen pals with each other. And so all around the same time, I got a little bit of interest from some publishers that I submitted to online, either via email or online forms. So I had all those three things going on at about the same time. And Scholastic came back. They had interest in Pyrosaurs. And they actually took it to acquisitions and passed on it once, but they then said, can you rewrite it? And I did. And then Lady Pancake got an offer. I think out of those 10 that I sent out, I got one rejection and then one offer from Sterling. And that, along with the other two manuscripts with interest and in acquisitions at Scholastic, and a personal reference from a friend of mine, helped me get some attention from an agent. And Kathleen Rushall, she's awesome. At Marshall Lyon Literary Agency, and I couldn't be happier, and it all ended up working out that all three books sold, Dear Dragon is coming out with Viking Penguin in the fall of next year, fall of 2016, and Pyrosaurs is with Scholastic, that's going to be illustrated, Dear Dragon is going to be illustrated by Rodolfo Montalvo, and his sketches are awesome, and then Pyrosaurs with Scholastic is going to be illustrated by Michael Slack, and that's coming out in the spring of 2017. So
I like here, just to step back, because I feel like as a writer taking after my own heart in the way that I feel like we share a lot of interests, I feel that you're setting yourself up really well here, because when you go to school visits, you've got battling food and pirate dinosaurs and dragons. Like, yeah. Come on. This is fantastic.
It's all worked out really well. I feel very fortunate that it worked out this way. Things have worked out very well.
So when you're writing, when you're choosing characters, you were talking to my kids about choosing characters, and it was great to think about starting. Are you a person that starts with characters?
I think I start with, what do I want to see illustrated?
Okay, yeah.
And so, you know, what do I want to see? Do I want to see a pirate dinosaur? Yeah, I do. So that's why I wrote that book, and I'm surprised that it's never been done before.
I was just going to say that. I didn't know if you were looking at what hasn't been done, or what could I do differently? I suppose you must do that, because you have to research the market to some degree.
A little bit. The Pyrosaurs, I woke up at 2:30 in the morning, and I had Pyrobosaurs, pirate robot dinosaurs, in my head. I texted it to myself, and I went back to bed.
Yeah.
And that's where that one came. I took out the robo. It was just too confusing. But that's where Pyrosaurs came from. I mean, I guess at some point I looked it up, and there was nothing. There's it's weird. I mean, but not even in Kidlit. Not even in anything, movies, nothing.
Yeah.
So that's worked out really well. Michael Slack added a whole plot line to Pyrosaurs that is not in the story, and it actually makes it's not one of those plot lines that's just in the background. It's like, oh, there's also a mouse in there trying to find cheese or whatever. It's he actually made the story make more sense by adding this plot line. Not that it didn't make sense before, but it makes more sense now. And I'm like, wow, it's taking it to such another level, it's unbelievable.
See, that experience there, that's what I marvel at all the time. When you've done this thing and you get it, this manuscript, where you want it to be and polished and you like it and you're happy with it and other people like it too, the publishers like it, to see an illustrator come on and elevate your work into their illustration to become this whole new a piece of art. I mean, that's collaboration. That's the beauty of collaboration. But to be able to create this thing that wouldn't have existed if you did it on your own or he did it on his own, have it like that's really awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool. I think that it's the way that the publishing industry works, that, you know, I talk to the editor talks to the art director, and the art director talks to the artist. And I don't really talk to them at all. I've DM'd on Twitter with Michael Slack, like that's my messaging thing. But I, you know, I don't say anything about the process other than like, I saw your sketches, you know, looks great.
Are they gonna, would they say anything to you? But that, pardon my ignorance, but so you sell the manuscript, right? After that, does a publisher, or in the three books you've done so far, does a publisher come and say to you at any point along the line, hey, what do you think of this? Or can you change that? Or is it pretty much like you don't hear much until it's done?
I think it's been different in all my cases. I was asked by Viking, like, hey, you know, if you have any ideas, you know, feel free to hear some sketches. And I think that, you know, if I had an issue that I could say it, they may ignore it.
Oh, okay.
You know, but I think it also depends on where you are. I'm starting out. I'm at the beginning.
But it's not like you're left in the dark over it. They are sharing stuff along the way.
Yeah, but I also, you know, I have an agent, and so that helps. I think that, you know, it's... And like I said, I'm fortunate that I'm in this position, but I have friends who have had issues with not loving certain things, but they don't really have the voice to speak up to. So, I think it's really different for everybody. I can only speak to the stories I have. When are you going to start recording, by the way? you did?
Oh, no, I mean, we are, it is fully recording.
Wait.
Can you remove the stuff about the...
Can you take out what I said about Jess Keating? Because I really...
Josh, you are a fan of the podcast, or so you said. So taken from your word, I'm going to trust that you are a fan of the podcast, so you know that I don't edit.
Really?
Okay. So I think really anything from this point on, I mean, if you want to keep digging this hole, you can, but...
All right. I'm sorry, Jess. Okay. Well, let's just keep going then.
Hey, side thing. And I know that this has to be on you and on the person behind the book to do it, But the stuff you've been creating to go along with the book, the buttons and the trading cards, those are rad.
Yeah, so the publisher has been great. Sterling Publishing has been so behind this book. They made tote bags, they made the pins, and they made the buttons.
Did you have the idea?
And the magnets.
Did they
no.
ask what kind of stuff do you want to make? I mean, that's awesome what they did.
I think the way that the book turned out, mostly with Brendan Kearney's illustrations. I mean, when they made an offer on this book, I don't think they said, "Hey, this is going to be one of our lead titles for the fall of whatever." But I think a lot of it has to do with the way the illustrations turned out. They really liked it, and I spoke with the publicist and last January, and they had some ideas of things that they wanted to do, and they bounced them off me. But they were all, I mean, like the tote bags and. They have there's an activity kit that they put together. They put together a 12-page full color activity kit.
Is it on?
It's available on my website.
I'll have to put that up. Yeah,
joshfunkbooks.com. It's also on Sterling's website. And they've done this for a handful of their books, but they don't do it for every book.
But they don't do it for everyone.
No, they don't do it for everyone.
They can't, right?
And they put it together. It's something that a bookstore could have if they want to have a pancake breakfast or something like that. I think that was their intention. I made the trading cards, but that
if you want to make my characters and then eat them.
Yeah. So yeah, no, they have gone above and beyond. I think that's when I made the trailers when they said, "Hey, we have all these ideas." And I was like, wow, they're doing so much. I gotta match them. I gotta match their enthusiasm. So I was like, all right, so I'm going to make, I think that weekend I went home and I wrote the song for the trailer and recorded it. And
just said, can I have these?
Yeah, and well, then I sent them the song
these
and
images or whatever. Yeah,
it was just a mutual admiration thing that I was like, hey, I like that. You're doing awesome stuff, and they were like, oh, we love the song. And then I was like, okay, can I turn it into a trailer? And they were like, of course. And that kind of went over a period of a few months. I got the images and made the trailer. It took time, but they've been so behind this book. The trading cards I made because the website that I was gonna make bookmarks on had a thing that said collectible cards, and I was like, oh, that's way more interesting than a bookmark, and it's a picture book, so we don't need that. So I made trading cards, and it was fun. And they had the whole Team Lady Pancake, Team Sir French Toast thing going, I guess,
sweet.
With hashtags.
Like already
they were working on that, and that, so it's...
Well, the way that it plays into that competition without even knowing the resolution of the book, great. I mean, it's just great to choose a side of it. It makes the individual more invested in the book immediately, and that is fun. It gets you talking about the book. Like it's just smart marketing, I suppose.
Yeah, it was. And I don't know. I think they thought of the team thing, but I also had, whether I had fully formed the idea in my head. I mean, I had something like, we can definitely play with this whole competition thing, and however it works. What in the marketing process? I mean, I'm new to marketing too, so
right. I'm learning. We were talking. Outside of this recording, we're talking about that project that I'm working on, right? But to have a project where you have to consider lyric rights, it was something that I thought, I never even knew that was a thing for these books. But to see books like, just like, even like what you did, that you're able to adapt them into a song, you're able to do these different things with it. It's great that is something that you can do and that can exist for our children. More importantly, it's great that we have all this stuff that these kids can enjoy. Because that trailer, I mean, the entry for your book, the way that your book can engage kids, when right now, like the way you're getting in front of kids are librarians talking about it, right? Or having it facing out at a bookstore, or if you're doing any like author visits or stuff. But to have something online that a kid can watch over and over and over and sort of become invested in and then turn around and find the book behind it, that's great.
Yeah, I've had a few parents, I think they're probably mostly teachers, who've seen it through the online networks that we're both a part of. Have come back and said, oh, their kids are, they play it over and over again. A handful of people have been like, those few hundred YouTube clicks, they're all me, or something like that. They're all claiming. It's fun.
I think your next homework, and I know I've done some video editing that takes some time, but I think your next homework is to make a lyric video where we can follow the bouncing pancake or something.
Yeah. I have friends of mine that want me to make an app, like a racing app, because it's race,
gosh.
Right?
Yeah.
Minion Rush or Subway Surf.
Sounds like a lot. But
it does. I know. It would be fun to make, but I don't know if I have the time for that right now.
Well, and I guess even considering what are you doing for your other babies, for the other books that are coming out?
Yeah.
This is all something, it doesn't stop with with Lady Pancake. There are new books coming out.
Yeah, they're spaced out pretty nicely. I think I have about a year to publicize Lady Pancake. And, I mean, I'll do it forever if I can. But
sometimes it doesn't work out that way when you sell definitely. Books that they end up being on top of each other.
I've had friends that have had four in a season, and that's tough because you can't get...
In a season?
Well, I think Sedipta had four in a four-month period. And I know Tara Lazar has two. She has one. I thought this was a bear book. Just came out. Then Little Red Gliding Hood comes out next month, I think.
Close. Yeah.
So it's hard. You got to give them all the love that you can, and you're not in control of when they come out. It's really the publisher thinks mostly how their list looks.
Yeah.
So if they have a hole for a book that would be good in schools this month, then they'll put that one there because they think it works. And I'm sure they have many reasons as to why. And books get bumped. I mean, my Dear Dragon was originally supposed to be 6 months earlier, but it got bumped for I don't know why. I mean, I don't really care. I'm happy that it's in the fall, and the same thing with Pyrosaurs. It was supposed to be the summer of 2016. Now it's the spring of 2017. Frankly, they all got spread out for me, which is a good thing. I'm very happy about that. But for other people, it could get bumped in different directions.
Well, I need you to make me a deal this school year, and that is you need to let me know if any school puts on a real marathon between pancake-clad children and French toast-clad children. I could see like amazing cosplay of these characters at school visits. I talk about it. I'm sure you've heard a lot on this podcast that I love school visits. I love author visits. And I love seeing the way that some schools really are able to embrace and make the entire school aware of this author's body of work and embrace the characters. And you've got really fun characters that make that easy to do.
Yeah, I will have to look into the whole costume thing. I know people have mentioned, you should go dress up as a pancake for an event.
I'm not volunteering you. I think let the kids do it themselves.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm on board. Kids, go dress up as pancakes. I guess if you cut out a big piece of brown paper.
I mean, it wouldn't be that hard. Yeah
exactly. Go for it. I'm challenging you, Kidlit World. Teachers and librarians out there.
All right. Well, on the note of challenging, let's take this to the kickball field.
Oh, awesome.
All right, Josh, I'm assembling an all-star Kidlit Dream Team kickball tournament, and I want to know what one person alive or past from the Kidlit world you would want on your team and why.
So I kind of hate myself for this answer. I've been listening to the podcast for a while, and he's a publisher. I'm not sure he's written anything yet, but Derek Jeter.
Really?
I'm a Red Sox fan. I really do, but I want to win. I'm sorry.
Playing to win.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm playing to win. So I feel really dirty having said that. But yeah, I'm going there. David Ortiz hasn't written any kids' books yet, as far as I know, so I'm going with Derek Jeter.
All right, well.
He has his own publishing company, right? Is that part of Scholastic, maybe?
Is it? Well, we'll see if that happens. Maybe this is a chance for you.
Yeah, Derek Jeter, when we schedule this kickball game, you're on my team. I'm picking you.
Well, thanks for coming on, and congratulations about the release of Lady Pancake and Sir French Toast. I hope you have a lot of awesome school visits, and I hope you can see all the ways that your book is connecting with children and the ways that they're enjoying it.
Well, thank you very much. It's been awesome to be on here.
Let's Get Busy is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winter, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland, and by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the books at allthewonders.com. Our theme music is by Blue Ducks. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, there are a ton of great episodes of Let's Get Busy archived and waiting for you at lgbpodcast.blogspot.com. And if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on the blog or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that is a very good thing indeed. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts.
That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.